This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge.
The minisode.
Oh shit, what number is this? 7?
I don't know. It's a review one.
I think it's episode 7, minisode 7. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
But this week we are going to cover the Netflix limited. No.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, I almost thought it was Hulu. Okay. You're right. Netflix limited series called Unbelievable.
And apparently it is based on a true story.
Yes, that is their claim at the beginning.
And it's basically about this girl who reports that she's raped, and the police kind of like don't believe her, and then she goes back on her statement and she gets charged with false reporting. And then 3 years later, there's a string of rapes that are really similar to hers, and they end up catching the guy and realizing that she was telling the truth the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's like this premise of this show.
That is. And I guess we should just give our ratings before I start talking about everything. Yeah. How did you rate it?
I don't know if I can do this, but I'm going to rate it 10 out of 10.
Yeah, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
It was a great show.
It was really, really good. I was going to do a 10 out of 10, but I'm going to do a 9 out of 10 because there's always room for improvement in anything you do. But, I mean, you still do you, girl. If it was a 10 out of 10 in your head, do it.
I really liked it. And I just, like, there were some episodes that I don't have notes for because I just was into it. And then at the next two episodes later, I was like, oh, shit, I should be writing something.
Yeah, it was a really, really good show. It's 8 episodes long. Mm-hmm. Each episode is about an hour. It's a little bit under.
Yeah, some are an hour and 10 minutes and some are 45 minutes.
Yeah, which is the case with, I feel like, a lot of limited series. Mm-hmm. But it had a fucking great cast.
It did.
I loved the girl who played. So it has a great cast, girl who's attacked.
Yeah, her name's Caitlin Dever.
Yes.
And she's actually from a show that my parents watch and my boyfriend watches because it's real conservative. But it's, what is the name of the show? It's the one with Tim Allen, the new one, Last Man Standing.
Oh, that's what it's called. I was like, I have literally no idea about conservative television. Yeah.
She's, it's like a sitcom.
Yeah.
And she plays the youngest daughter of Tim Allen on it. And she's this little tomboy in it.
Oh, that's cute.
But her as a person, seeing her act from that to this, she is a great fucking actress.
She is. And obviously, it's a show that deals with the topic of rape, so it can be triggering for people. So if that is something that would trigger you, then I would say maybe don't watch it. Yeah. I think that they handled the idea of rape really well, because we'll just fucking get right into it. So episode 1, you have a girl who says she's raped, because she is, and she calls her old foster mom and the police come, and it's male detectives, so naturally they already are just a little, not insensitive, but just don't really have an idea of what it would be like to have your home broken into as a teenage girl living on her own and being raped.
Yeah.
They could never identify with that experience. But I think that they handled rape really, really well, because she's violated the first time with the attack. She's violated again and again and again when she has to retell the story over and over and over again to every new detective she meets. And then she has to go to the hospital, be literally violated again by having them perform these very embarrassing, demeaning tasks, and then just send her home with some medicine like they don't give a fuck that she was attacked. And it just shows the trauma that happens if you choose to report your crime, because you just go through it over and over again. And I think that's really important, because a lot of people are well, why didn't you tell the police you were raped? It's because this girl just went through all of this trauma and
yeah, got basically nothing for it.
She had to retell what happened to her like 10 fucking times. And yeah, every time you retell it, you're either going to remember something else or forget to mention something because you've already told the story 1,000 fucking times.
Yeah, and your mind is somewhere else at that point.
Yeah, or trying to block it out, because there's some people that can relive it and be fine, and there's some people that can't, and they just need to fucking block it out.
Yeah. So the two foster moms, mm-hmm. the one who's a real piece of shit,
yes.
and the one who's not.
So the one that's not's name in the show is Colleen.
Yes, Colleen is a really nice foster mom. And the other woman, I'm sure, would be fine, but she doesn't think that Marie is responding to a rape like a woman should. And kind of tells the police that she thinks that Marie made it up for attention.
Yeah, it's like she calls the detective to tell him about her past, and it's like,
yeah,
I think she might have made it up, but I'm not saying that, but I think that happened. In my notes, I literally wrote the foster mom's a fucking bitch.
I did too.
Her name's Judith. Okay.
And I thought it was interesting, though, because her excuse for thinking that Marie made it up was that she was also sexually assaulted. And she mentions to Colleen, you were also sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. You know how we should react to that. And even like the thing that bothered me so fucking much is at the beginning, the detective tells the shitty foster mom that everyone responds to things differently.
Yeah.
And then proceeds to be like, but she is acting kind of weird about it. So maybe she is lying. And it was the fucking worst.
And like, even though throughout the episode, all of them, honestly,
yeah.
you're seeing these like flashbacks
mm-hmm.
through like the assault, which I feel like was a really good way to portray it. Instead of doing just the scene, you just see what they remember.
Yeah.
And but then when she's going back and forth on her statement and she was like, well, it was a dream. And then mm-hmm. I was like, maybe she didn't get raped. Maybe she did. And then the end of the episode happened and I was like, fuck. Yeah.
See, I never thought that it was a dream. I think that she just like got so afraid of the people in power in her life because she was in foster care. But it was like the way that they flashed to the crime happening, like you could tell what was happening but you also couldn't at the same time, which I think is a lot more respectful than just showing a full-blown rape scene, because those I think are just like really unnecessary. They happen a lot in horror films, and every time it happens I'm like, that was just absolutely too much what you just did. But the first episode really just follows Marie. So that's why we're going to be kind of Marie heavy in this first episode. Like Sarah said earlier, her attack happens in 2008 when she is 16. But basically, she had a rough life. The police, because she had a rough life, assumed that she was just making all of this stuff up for attention and get her to retract her statement, which I also thought was a really powerful scene, because you can just see her like breaking down. Mm-hmm. And while she's breaking down in her head, she's flashing back to the rape over and over again. But the police can't see that.
Yeah.
So.
And I liked that, like, she's also flashing back like to the beach where she's just trying to be in her happy place.
Mm-hmm.
And like they keep pushing it out of her.
Yeah. You go, because I'm going to say something real stupid.
I was going to change the subject, so you can go.
Oh, this is just a fun fact that I was like, that voice is very familiar to me while I was watching it. Not the original detective who, like, makes her write down her statement and everything like that, but the second older, balder detective, he is Patrick Starr from SpongeBob.
He is! Wow.
Yeah, he voices Patrick Starr. And after that, I was like, I can't take this motherfucker seriously.
I didn't even recognize his voice, but now you say that, like, I've seen pictures of him, and I'm like, yep, that's exactly him.
Yeah, so that guy, while in the show was a huge piece of shit, in real life. Is also SpongeBob. Yeah. I mean, Patrick Starr.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So after she goes back and forth and she like retracts her statement saying that she was raped.
Yeah.
Everyone in her like support group just fucking shuts her out. And it is so shitty. Like, you've all been, like, you're all in this group home type situation.
Yeah.
And, like, you're all supposed to be there for each other because you've all experienced these things. And they just, all of them shut her out. And, like, that's dangerous for a person.
And I think it's, like, tough because if she had in that group been, like, like, I lied to the police, like, because blah, 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 and actually was able to project her feelings, which I'm sure would be very difficult at that time. Like, it would have been different. But also, if you knew someone who went to the police and said they were raped and they told you later that they weren't, like, you might not completely shut them out, but for a while, you would be like, that's real shady. Like, at least to me, I feel like I would be like, I don't think I can, like, hang out with you for a while.
See, I would be like, well, why did you do that? Like,
yeah,
like, is there something else happening? Like, something that's true. Like that.
Maybe I'm just a bad friend because I get where they're coming from because they're also like all 16 and 17 year old kids, and they were all just like worried about their friend and they think that she lied. So one of them, we never find out who, gives away her identity to the press later on in the series, and that's fucked up. I think it was that girl who she spent the night with she was attacked, because that girl seemed the most upset by the lie. But yeah, the someone within that group home like lets it out to the press who the person is that said they were raped and weren't. And it kind of, like, ruins Marie's life from there.
Do you want to talk about the end of the episode?
I don't remember it, honestly, so you would have to...
So, at the end of the episode is where she rides her bike to the bridge in, like, the pouring rain.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And she goes to jump off the bridge.
Yeah.
And then it just fucking cutscenes.
Yep.
And I just started panicking.
Yeah. I, like, realistically in my head, I was like, well, they're not gonna fucking end it there because it's, like, a series, but they easily could have.
Yeah, because all the other ones were about the other rapes.
Yeah, and they were happening in different states, because the first one was that in...
Washington.
Was it Washington? Mm-hmm. I thought it was in a completely random
state. The first one's in Washington, the other ones were in Colorado.
Okay. I thought, for some reason, there was, like, a weird third state, because... It doesn't matter. I'm sure it's not correct. But should we just go on to episode two then?
Sure.
So episode two opens with her still on the bridge, which was like super scary because it's raining and a car drives by really quickly and she like pulls herself back and it looks like she's almost going to slip for a second. Mm-hmm. Like she's decided she's not actually going to jump and then almost slips and you're like... Jesus Christ. But that is the opening, but it's not really what that whole second episode is fully about, because with the second episode, you still have Marie, but you start getting more attacks in the future.
Yeah. And like going back to those like other kids in that group home, like she gets off the bridge and she calls her friend and her friend, like, comes to get her, so you can tell that she, like, there's still some sort of care. But then when they're walking away, she was like, I was sleeping. Don't ever call me again and wake me up.
Yeah. Which was mad shitty. But
yeah.
Teenage girls are also terrible people, so. So, the second episode also deals with the next attack that we are aware of that's reported. And that happens in 2010 in Colorado. And that actress is also super great. I don't know her name or anything, but she's from awesome.
She's from another Netflix show that they did with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah. It's a movie.
Oh, yeah. But her name is Amber in the show.
Yeah. I'm terrible with names. Like, I will literally still sometimes forget Office characters that I'm referring to, and I've seen the show at least 10 times plus. But she, like, had the foresight while she was being attacked to try and remember as many things as possible about her attacker. And she was, like, just a fucking smart cookie.
She was.
Like, she was really, really intelligent. And I liked her story because she is fine, seemingly, up until the point where it's time for her to leave the hospital. Like, she has a brave face that entire time. And she seems like she's really intelligent and, like, this attack isn't going to bother her at all. And then, like, you kind of see her spiral throughout the rest of the series as well.
She definitely does.
Yeah.
And, like you were saying, she's super smart during the attack. Like, she asks the guy questions about himself and tries to tell him stuff about herself to make her seem like a person more.
Yeah.
And, like, but this guy was also smart. Like, going through the second rape, he held her for four hours and then made her shower for like an hour or 40 minutes or something like
that.
It
was only 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then,
or maybe it got progressive. I don't know.
And like, he took all of her sheets, all of her stuff. And then you find out that this guy isn't just attacking random people, that he's also stalking them.
Yeah.
Because he had been in her house before.
Yeah. She noticed that a hair ribbon had gone missing from her home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like, what, months later?
Yeah. I think it was like a month or two.
Yeah. He used it during the attack against her and like brought out the hair ribbon. So he had been casing her house. He had been in her home before and he had been watching her. Something I thought was interesting was he was described as gentle throughout most of the attack. Like, he kept stopping to make sure that the women were okay. And just in general, he has a weird vibe because he is raping you, but also, like, making sure that you're okay with,
like,
him raping you.
Like, she was cold, so he brought a blanket to wrap her in.
Yeah. And he is in general... a weird fucking guy. But I mean, if you're a serial rapist, you're probably a weird guy. Also, similarities between just those first cases was like, they had sliding glass doors and he told Amber when he was leaving, like, you should put something in your sliding glass door so no one can do this to you again.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to be nice, trying in parentheses, but in reality he was just like letting her know, like, this is why.
Yeah. And it's your fault.
Like, yeah, like, you didn't take enough care, so this is why this is happening to you. And I was just like, angry fist shaking at him.
Yeah. Like, after episode two, that was where it really hit me, where I was like, I have to lock every door and window in my house at this moment right now.
Yeah. So in episode two, we get a lot of, you said her name was Amber.
Yes.
We get a lot of Amber's story because that's the second attack. We get introduced to the female detective whose name I also do not know.
Detective, Duvall.
Okay. Detective Duvall, who, this is why it's not a 10 out of 10 for me. If they mentioned religion one more fucking time. It was just a little heavy-handed for me. Like,
it was.
All of the religious aspects. She's a religious police officer, which is fine, but the way that they kept implementing it was just, like, really weird. Like, Amber asked what that quote meant, and she's like, oh, it's from the Bible. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
But I think, like, later on, I think they did it to show like the difference between her and the other and Detective Rasmussen.
Yeah.
Because like Detective Rasmussen just kept making fun of religion and I thought that was funny.
But then at the end, she like was considering religion herself a little bit. Like she was like, I prayed today and like stuff like that. And like, I get it. She was being comical, but they did also allude to the fact that like maybe religion might change this hardened female cop. And like, Amber, who has always been analytical and intelligent after the crime, goes towards religion.
And like, instead of counseling, which is kind of a weird thing.
Yeah. And like, that's totally fine if that's how you get through the attack. But some of it just felt a little heavy handed to me. Like they were just, that's why I think it was just a 9 out of 10 for me personally. But in this episode, because we should probably kind of move it along, we also get Marie, like we keep cycling back to her, and you just basically see her life like descend into chaos and darkness because of this crime. And it's two folds of the crime. It's the actual thing that happened to her ruining her psyche, and like she can't focus at work, she can't do this and that. And then everyone around her thinking she's lying, and they're all basically like, you're a piece of shit because you lied. And everyone's kind of just treating her like she's a bad person.
Mm-hmm. And so episode 3. So this is where her name gets let out and she's ridiculed.
Yes.
And then she receives a citation for the false report. Yeah. And she's like, what the fuck is this? Doesn't know what to do. And I feel like her counselor should have been there more for her, because he was just like, well, we'll just figure it out. And then, like, she went to the court by herself and all this stuff.
Yeah, it was. It was like, it was also a good portrayal of the foster care system, I think, because you have these people who are put in place to help you, but they're also helping 30 other kids, and they want to be there for you, but they also can't. The whole thing is fucked, basically. Yeah,
her whole life is just terrible.
Yeah. Episode 3 also actually opens with us meeting Detective Rasmussen.
Mm-hmm.
She is outside of an apartment where another woman has been raped, and she sees this guy with a backpack like go out into the woods, and this motherfucker was moving rocks in the darkness to change the water current,
the water
right
path, yeah.
And that part made me laugh so hard, and I just wrote down, and this weirdo's out here moving rocks.
Honestly, he was like, well, all the streams are fucked. We need to help the streams. And she was like, it's like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you doing?
And that guy was definitely weird and should probably be looked into for other reasons. But he wasn't the person who was being raped. But we kind of meet the like grizzled cop counterpart to like the fresh-faced religious cop. And I loved their fucking interactions with one another.
They had really good chemistry. And after we met Detective Rasmussen, I literally wrote, the Rasmussen lady is a bitch but does her job well. And that was like my first opinion of her.
Yeah.
But like later on, I was like, wow, I fucking love you.
I loved her too. She was fantastic. And basically by happenstance, these two women get put together. We're not going to give you all of the details, go watch the show. But they get together and they both kind of come up with the conclusion that it could be a police officer or someone who is in the military. And I think this is another reason why I kind of kept linking it to the Golden State Killer before he started just murdering people. Because everyone thought he was a cop, and it turns out he was. He also weirdly looks like the rapist that they chose in this show. So I think that they kind of had influences of that, but I could be totally wrong. But I just liked that they kept talking about the crimes that police officers often commit and get away with, like how high the domestic violence charges are.
It was like one third or something like
that. It's really, really high because people who want to abuse others go into positions of power, and being a police officer is one of the easiest ways to get into a local position of power. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And like, you have control and authority, and
yeah,
if you want to hit your fucking wife, she can't stop you.
Yeah.
She can't. What is she going to do? Call the cops?
The cops are going to show up and they're going to be like, stop hitting your wife and drive off.
Yeah.
Which is really shitty, and it shouldn't be like that. And I think the show also did a really good job of exploring that topic, because the women were also afraid to come out and say that they thought it was a cop, even with the FBI, because they thought that they would instantly stop being taken seriously, because they were like, oh, people are just going to think we're women cops out to get other like men.
Yeah, which happens, but like, I like how they kept pursuing it. And then in the third episode, they find a third rape in another county, and they're like, wow, this 100% is probably a cop or someone who knows cop behavior. Procedures.
Yeah.
Like, they end the episode so fucking determined, and these two women are like just go-getters and like the most determined people I've ever seen in my life. And I strive to be them.
Yeah. I actually wrote down the percentage. Oh, wait, no, this is a different percentage. 37% of rapists also already have a domestic disturbance charge against them before they rape. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. So something that the women start, like, another reason they think it's a cop is because he's only raping once in each county. So no one can connect the rapes to one another. And the man fucked up because he raped in the same county as Marie, or not the same county, but the same like area, neighboring town as Marie. Do you not remember that? When Colleen's like watching the news and they start talking about that elderly woman who was raped.
Oh, yeah.
Her crime was retracted. So he went and raped in the same area because he thought he could get away with it. And it didn't ultimately lead to his demise. But I think that was kind of interesting that they showed, like, they kept talking about how he's specifically striking in these counties, and then he does it again in the same county because Marie has retracted her statement from the police.
And, like, there was, when they first mentioned the cop thing, they're like, oh, well, everyone knows that because of CSI and shows like that. And I was like, honestly, I didn't know that because of CSI. Like, I know, like, obviously they're not real life, but some of, like, the procedures or the tactics or whatever
are real.
Yeah, and you see them and you're like, oh, if I'm going to be a serial killer, I know to keep on the move, keep a low profile.
Yeah.
Have a car that doesn't stand out, do this and that and whatever.
Right. So me taking notes is me kind of just reacting to things that are happening.
Okay.
And I just, there's a moment where Duval?
Yes.
Detective Duval is in Kansas, because that's the other state he raped in.
Yes.
Kansas. She like saw some matching crimes in Kansas. So she goes there and she's sitting in a diner and there's this guy being really fucking creepy, like keeps staring at her. And then like some young women walk in and he like fucking stares at them, watches them all leave. And then she gets up to leave and she throws her jacket over her gun to show her gun off to him, and he's just like, nope, 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 nope.
But like, he kept the strongest eye contact, and like, a lot of times if you like feel a guy staring at you and like you make direct eye contact with them and hold it, they will look away and stop and be like, oh, okay, this is kind of weird.
And but he, like, did not.
No, they just stared at each other and it was so intense as she's reading the rape forensics guideline.
And I thought, I just loved that scene because you also get that scene in like classic cop movies where mm-hmm. it's men doing it. And I just loved how they like kind of flipped everything to like show that women can do the same things. And like she was purposely trying to intimidate him to let yeah. him know, like, you don't know who the fuck you're always messing with. And then she just stares, like she stands directly behind him and just like holds it for the most uncomfortable amount of time and then leaves. And that scene just, I was like, this is great. I love this.
Yeah. I feel like this is a point for later, but I'm gonna forget it.
Okay.
Like, just about the show in general, how you said that they like flipped it because it's normally the man.
Yeah.
Like, I love how the two people that were able to do everything were the women, and when the like male detectives did anything, they just fucked it up. And I was like, fuck yeah. Girl power.
Girl power. In this episode, we also get another scene, but this time with Detective Rasmussen, where she is targeting a cop that has lived in every single county during the times the rapes yes. have occurred. So she thinks that it's him. And he invites her to go back to his place. And the bartender walks up and gets ready to take the beer glass away. And he goes, oh, my friend here will want to keep that. And then spits in her
yeah.
face. I was so livid for her that when he spit in her face, I was like, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no.
See, when he first, like, was hitting on her
yeah.
and was, like, inviting him back to her place and was like, she'll want that. I was like, what kind of sexual ass, freaky ass shit are you into with this fucking beer bottle?
Yeah.
And then he was like, I know who you are, Grace Rasmussen. Mm-hmm. Like, poo. Like.
And then he leaned in real close and said, like, I know people, like, above you, so don't fucking test me, basically. Yeah,
like, threatened her.
Yeah. It just showed the people who are in the force who are just, what's trash? That word? Yeah, trash. I was going for a word that starts with a D, I think, but it doesn't matter. I wrote literally nothing for episode 6, but I'm pretty sure that episode 6, they get closer and closer to who the person is. Stop it. Don't look at me and fucking cry laugh at your own notes.
Wait. All my notes say for episode 6 was they have suspects. That's the only thing I wrote.
But yeah, episode 6 is when they narrow it down and they come across this guy whose DNA matches and they decide that they're going to stake out his home. But I did write down stuff for episode 7.
Okay.
So episode 7, they start doing a stakeout of the house and they don't realize that there's two brothers living in the there. Same house yeah. because the DNA tests that they ran will only show you that it's DNA from this male lineage in this family. It will not narrow it down to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So Detective Duval starts following this man and makes a huge scene in a diner yes. trying to get his DNA. And at the same time, Detective Rasmussen and the FBI guy are knocking on the door and they keep knocking and no one comes. And then they are like leaving and the door open. And when that happened, I was like, I'm shook.
Yeah, because they were about to start putting like security cameras around everywhere. And yeah. then the door opens and they were like, fuck.
Yeah. But and
Rasmussen like thinks on her feet and was like, oh yeah, there's been burglaries around.
Yeah, she was really, really good on her feet, but she also had done undercover work for yeah. most of her career, which she kind of points to as like being the reason why, and it showed that she was just like really fucking good at her job.
She is.
Episode 7 is like where everything pretty much happens.
Yes.
It's like the climax of the show, and then episode 8 is like the nice wrap up. So, in episode 7, they get the guy to answer the door, and then they realize it's one of these brothers. They get the DA to allow them a search warrant of the house, and they catch the rapist.
Yeah, and like, the thing that I was like, why doesn't Detective Rasmussen go with her? Like,
yeah,
I know that she was like giving her this big break, but mm-hmm. I was like, you could still be there and let her do the arresting. And like,
I thought it was nice.
It was nice, but I was like, it would have been so much more action, I feel like, if she had been there.
Yeah, but I think, like, I like that it was this huge buildup. Like, you have a scene of 20 cop cars driving to this guy's house. You think there's going to be a shootout. You think it's going to be True Detective season one, but it is not. The guy opens the door and they go, you're under arrest, motherfucker.
Yep.
And they arrest him and they take him to jail. And now here's the thing I loved about this show. Not once did I see a pair of women titties. But you know what I did see? I saw this man's flaccid dick. And I, again, it's like a turn on the head. We're not going to see, like, we see light female nudity because there's rape scenes. Yeah. But you never, like, get a boob shot. You never get a butt shot. But you get this just like middle-aged man standing there butt ass naked
in jail
humiliated like he humiliated other people. And I like wrote that down. They like, he was bald, so they have to pluck five hairs from each zone, and they're like plucking the hairs on his head, and I was like, ooh, that hurts. And I didn't even think about his pubes, and they go to his pubic hair and start plucking that, and I was like, imagine being the police officer that has to have your face this close to this man's genitalia.
And he was, and like, wincing when they were plucking his pubic hair. And I was like, yeah, that's what you fucking deserve. Yeah.
Like, the whole time they were doing that, I was like, yeah, you be fucking humiliated, asshole.
Right?
Like, I was being really extra. And, yeah, my next note was about Rasmussen not going, which... like, at first, I didn't understand why she didn't go, and then I think you're not supposed to. And then when she comes back, you find out that she was just trying to let her younger companion have the win. And I think that another reason she did that was because she was so hard on Duval the whole time and was like, you're not, like, hardened enough, you're not seasoned enough, and then, like, let her get it. So I thought that was, like, a nice, wholesome moment, and I was like, good for you, Detective Rasmussen.
So when they're at the house,
yes,
I feel like they do it again where, like, the males that were in charge of collecting evidence, like, fucked up because she's like, there's an amp here and there's no guitar.
Yeah.
And she pulls it and you can see something sticking out, and she opens it and it's full of all of the women's underwear. And she was just like, the fuck? Like, come take pictures of this. Look at what I found when we were about to leave.
And in general, it was really cool to see her explore his room, because all of the signs of him being a fucking creep are there.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother, like, genuinely didn't know. Like, his brother was like, he's a weird guy, but, like, he's fine.
Well, like, his brother's first reaction was, did he build a bomb?
Yeah.
Did he try to blow people up?
Because they were both in the military. We should probably say that. Which, I mean, like, kind of makes sense. Like, his brother knew something was wrong with him, but was never going to, like, rat him out, you know?
And his brother was, like, knowing, like, this is going to kill our mom. Like, you should have just killed him because that would have hurt her less.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
But you shouldn't have done that shit to hurt your mom.
I would have beat my son's ass. Like,
also another fun fact, the brother is Ken Cosgrove in Mad Men.
Never seen that show.
And at the very end of the show, they are able to get into some of his computer, but not the full thing. And this is where they discover the pictures of Marie, because there's pictures of every attack victim. And they, like, what I liked is that they don't show any super graphic images. Any photo they show is, like, a woman who is crying or something, which is still very, like, upsetting.
Because you know what's happening.
Yeah, but it's not, like, a full-blown picture of what is going on. And all of the emotion is from their faces, like them reacting to mm-hmm. it. And they see a picture of Marie and they're like, that girl looks 12.
Yeah.
Which she does. Like, 100%. She's really fucking young.
Even when they're like 3 years later and it's solved and they show her, I'm like, she still looks 12.
Yeah. So the final episode.
Well, I was going to say really quickly about episode 7. Marie has to go to like mandated counseling.
Oh, yeah. That was really sweet.
Yeah. And like her counselor is super nice. And she's like, I don't want to talk. And she's like, okay, well, I don't want to sit here. So tell me about some movies.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really funny that the movie that she mentioned was Zombieland. And now Zombieland 2 is just now coming out. And
I also thought that was funny.
But then I said at the end that of episode 7, you got the proof that Marie was raped. Like, for sure. And you're just like, yes.
Yes. And so episode 8, when they called the detective and like said, hey, we're going to send you a picture of Marie.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, no, that didn't happen. Like, she said that she wasn't raped. And they're like, well, we have literal pictures of her attack, so I'm just going to send those over. And at first I was like, he's not going to pursue it. Like, I didn't think he was, because realistically, he didn't have to tell anybody else.
Exactly.
You know, like, what I mean?
He could have just been like, oh, well, I fucked up.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So the detective goes to where Marie is working, which is seemingly a go-kart facility.
Yeah.
And he tries to talk to her and, like, let her know that he knows that she wasn't lying. And I kind of respected him in this moment because, like, he was admitting he was wrong. He never actually apologized, but he still was coming to say, like, I believe you now.
Yeah, like.
And he said, the rape I made you say didn't happen. And I was like, oh, this episode's gonna make me cry.
Yeah, this was a beautiful episode.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, just with episode 8, I don't think I've ever seen a series end so well.
Yeah, like, so wrapped up and nice. And initially, the city gives her $500, which is what she was paid, she had to pay against the city for misreporting something. And that was their way of kind of, like, sweeping it under the rug. And, I mean, it doesn't really happen in this order in the episode, but just for the sake of, like, being linear.
The story, yeah.
So she goes to a lawyer and is basically like, I want to sue
the
everybody.
City.
Yeah. And this part, I get it. She's 19 years old at this point. So $150,000 sounds like a lot of money to her. Because which it is.
Yeah, that's the settlement that the city wanted to do when she tried to sue them.
The city says that they will give her $150,000. And the lawyer is like, we can get you twice that amount.
Yeah, we can double that easily.
Yeah, like, we can get that. And she is like, that's fine. That's more money than I've ever had. That's more money than I ever will have.
Yeah.
And I just want to get my life started and get past this. I wish she would have taken more money.
Yes.
Because that Jeep she bought.
It was a nice Jeep.
It was a nice Jeep and was at least $50,000 itself. So, but they do like a really, really good time of closing out Marie's story. They give her the moment at the beach that she's been longing for. And she gets to like reflect on where her life is at. She buys herself a goddamn Jeep, and she has a bike rack on it so she can still ride her damn bike if she would like to. And in general, like, it was just really nice. It wrapped up really nicely with her. I just wish she would have asked for more money.
Yeah, and I do, like, after she got the money, and the last thing she does before she leaves town is she goes back to the detective's office.
Yes.
And instead of going up to his office, she makes him come down to her. Power move number one. And then she was like, you know, I got this money, I got all of this, but I never got a fucking apology.
Yeah.
And like,
Patrick Starr is there.
Patrick Starr is there. And he's like, I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry. And I'm like, I feel like it wasn't enough, but at least it was something.
Yeah.
And I wrote, honestly, Marie suing the city is a great thing for her. She fucking deserves it. And then on Marie moving on, like, she got the apology that she deserves from Detective Parker. And I believe she's going to do great things. And it was a great way to end. But then on to the other part.
Yeah. So we also have the trial and sentencing of the rapist. And this was really cool because he pled guilty to get less time, basically. Mm-hmm. Not less time, probably
like a plea deal.
Yeah, he just took a plea deal, basically.
And he wanted to get the kidnapping charges dropped. And that was so weird to me. Like, why?
Yeah.
He wanted to do that. We never found out why.
And criminals do weird shit like that all the time. Definitely. Because they'll be like, yeah, I murdered and ate the flesh of all of my victims, but I still didn't kidnap them.
Yeah, like I didn't rob them.
I draw the line at burglary.
Right?
So it's a weird power move. Like, that's the only power they have left, so they're going to try and make it any way they can. But he has a very, very encrypted computer that they want the password for, and he won't give it to them. And to me, that indicates that there are many, many more victims. Mm-hmm. And the computer probably had horrible things like child pornography, things like that, like things that you wouldn't want anyone to find. And he wouldn't give that up for a plea deal at all.
Yeah. So that, I feel like that was the only like thing that left you on a cliffhanger at the end, was not knowing. But I also liked that they had the idea of figuring out the timelines of the rapes. Mm-hmm. And every time the rape stopped and restarted, because he would stop multiple times, they charged that as another count of rape.
Yeah.
And like in the sentencing hearing, when the judge goes, I'm going to sentence you to the maximum amount of years, and went 327.5 years, I just cried.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah.
But before he's sentenced, they also let the victims who are there give their victim statements, which were really, really powerful. Mm-hmm. Amber was in the back. She couldn't, give hers, but it was there. Like, she was there with her closure. And I liked that because I feel like you don't often get to see victim statements actually read in true crime shows.
No, you definitely don't.
You hear about them when you're researching them. And something I thought was so fucking funny at the end was the rapist wants to sit down and do an interview. And he refuses to do it with a woman because he says women make him uncomfortable.
I wonder how he makes women feel.
But during this interview, you only see a brief moment of it. But he's like kind of being jovial and like laughing with the FBI agent. Mm-hmm. Like the FBI agent isn't laughing, but he's just like, he's telling him how a rapist thinks and like how you need to get ahead of them. And it just shows that all of these criminals are the same, essentially, because if you watch a lot of interviews, they're also fucking casual. Like, all, like, just chuckling about their crimes, like, oh, I got away with it for so long. And he makes a comment about how the most evidence he's ever left behind at a scene was during Marie's attack, and said that when he got away with that one, he realized that he could do a lot more.
Yeah, like,
because those fucking police didn't fucked sweep up the apartment as well as they should because they didn't believe her.
Yep. Like, he was like, well, if I could get away with that, then I can get away with whatever the fuck I want as long as I get a little more and more careful as time goes on.
Yeah. And it was just a lot. They also, just like general things, they showed how escalation occurs, because he starts off using no weapon. Well, he used like a knife that he found in the home, but then he brings in a gun and like he brings in weapons to start intimidating the women, and he just escalates his crimes. The mm-hmm. rapes last for longer periods of time. He does more and more shit. And I don't know. It was just a damn good show.
It really was. Like, it shows kind of like a different side of sexual assault and rape.
Yeah.
That, like, you don't see all the time on shows.
Yeah. And I think for the true crime buff, you know that. Like, mm-hmm. you know that women, if they are raped, they go through trauma multiple times just in the process of reporting it. But not the average person would know that.
Yeah.
So the show just does, like, a really simple showing of how it happens and, like, the effect it can have on a person. And it was just really well done.
Yeah.
I don't know who directed it, but I'm sure it was a woman.
Probably. But, yeah, it was really good. It was directed by... Oh.
Was it directed by a man?
There was three directors.
Yeah, for different episodes, probably.
Yeah. A woman named Lisa Cholodeco did three episodes. A man named Michael Diner did three episodes. And a woman named Susanna Grant did two episodes.
Cool.
So mostly women.
Yeah. But overall, it was an amazing show. I highly suggest watching it if you have not. If you have not, we just ruined everything for you. Still really worth the watch.
It really is.
Because so much more happens that we didn't talk about. And this is already a long mini-sode for us, so definitely go out and watch it. All right, guys, we hope that you liked this mini-sode, and we hope that you actually check out that show on Netflix, because it is very, very good. And keep on binging. Bye!
See ya!